So it is great to be here today. I tell you what, it's fun to look out and see all kinds of faces. I already know. I mean, I actually feel like I'm kind of already a part of your church. I tell you, the relationships that you build when you go on a trip like this are absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, I love hosting teams, and you'll see why when I share my story a little bit. So I was actually born in the Philippines, lived there for 10 years. My parents were missionaries there. Came back to the U.S. We ended up staying here. I was definitely a third culture kid. I missed the Philippines. I felt out of place in the U.S. But I ended up going into technology, worked at a company for 30 years doing software development, all of that. And then one year, my middle daughter said, "Hey, Dad, I want to go with this group to the Philippines on a mission trip." Now, she was like 16 years old. I said, "Oh, hold on. I need to talk to them." And so I talked to them. They heard my story, and they said, "Why don't you all come?" So we all went to the Philippines on a family mission trip. And to see, there were times where after we did stuff, we would come back to the hotel, and we'd sit there, and we would cry as a family. And we would, and it was just, I loved it. And there was one time when one of my other daughters, I have three, made this comment. She said, "Dad, instead of going to Hawaii this summer on a family vacation, can we come back to the Philippines on a family mission trip?" And I thought, what would I pay as a dad to have my kids say that? And it totally changed my perspective. And it's one of the reasons I love when families come and serve together, because I think it dramatically impacts our kids. You know, I believe in stories. As you've already kind of said, I do this tour, I tell these stories. I think God, illustrating what God does, you really need to tell stories of what he does. You can see that in the Old Testament, right? Story after story after story of what God did and how he worked. So before I tell you about the ministry, I want to tell you some stories. So I want you to introduce you to Abby. She is one of our missionaries at Kids International Ministries. Next slide, there. And she is critical to our ministry. She helps with the guest house. She manages the kitchen. She runs a ministry called Adonai. She is always there when needed. She has a fantastic relationship with Christ. She shares Christ with other people. And Abby is critical to the ministry. But Abby has a story. So let me tell you a little bit about Abby's story. So Abby came to our ministry back in 2016. Actually, she was working at a call center in the Philippines, a lot of call centers in the Philippines. And she was working at a call center. She came home one night, and she was gang raped. And she was pregnant. And she had no idea what to do. And there was a missionary that referred her. We have a home called Adonai that's a home for crisis pregnancy. So they referred her to us. We brought her into Adonai. And she spent that 6 months recovering and all of that. And she had planned on giving her son up for adoption. I remember 5 days after Abby had the baby, she came in and she started just crying. And she said, "I could never imagine loving this baby because of the situation." And she said, "Now I can't imagine living without him. Could I get a job at the ministry? I don't want to go back to the life I had." And Abby then, we brought her in, had she worked at the children's home, then she started doing all of this other stuff. And Abby's story is one of transformation. It's one of many, many stories, and Abby's story doesn't end there. So not long after Abby was the last girl in Adonai in 2017 when I took over the ministry, because we had to shut down Adonai. We didn't have enough money. So we had to shut it down, and she was the last mom. About 2.5 years ago, a church in the Philippines donated money for us to start the ministry again. So when we started it, I went to Abby, and I said, "Abby, how would you like to be house mom?" And she says, no, I'll just be house sister, okay? I'll just be house sister. She's younger. She's like, I'll just be house sister. But the home had changed, because now it was under our children's home. And so the first girl we got in the program was 13. The second one, 14. The third one, 13. And Abby comes back to me and says, "No, I'm house mom." And those girls come in with such hurt. And God uses the time there, and Abby has a common story to heal them and do so many things in their lives. One of the things that has happened, which was unexpected, is that A lot of the girls have no place to go when they get done. So because the abuse happened at home. And so they end up giving their child up for adoption, and then they get placed in our home. And we have six of them that are in our home. Go to the next slide. So here's a picture of five of them that are now in our home. And I'll tell you what, when you go up to the home, it is so much fun to see them. The smiles on their face, the happiness, the enthusiasm, okay? And not only do they live at our home, they go to our school. And they have Christian teachers at our school. Not only that, they're involved in our youth ministry. Not only that, they're out in the community around us sharing Christ to the kids in the community around us, going into some of these other communities. Not only that, they're involved in a very close partner church called Rockfish. On the leadership team for the youth, okay? God has made such a difference in their lives because of this. So I'd like to tell you some more stories. So the little girl over here on your left is May. May was one of my favorite at the children's home. This was back in 2017. She came out, she had this, you can tell in her face, right? She had this attitude, and she was just run up to me and give me a hug and all of that type of stuff. And May's story, however, is May was found on the streets of an island down south. And nobody knew who she was. She was like a year and a half old, couldn't talk. They couldn't find her parents. They had no idea who her mom and dad were. They ended up bringing her to Manila and placing her in our home. And so she was in our home for about 3 years. They named her May because she was found in the month of May. And then about 3 years later, she got ready to be adopted, right? She got on the list for adoption. And not long after that, at the gate, knock, knock, knock. A lady says, "I'm her mom." She had been looking for her for 3 years. But we couldn't give her to her mom. Her mom had to for a year. So we hired her mom, and she lived at our children's home. And then we had a party and sent her home. The little boy on the right, his name is Romeo. There's an area we serve in that's in Tondo. It's the poorest area of Manila. And Romeo he had 10 siblings. And we would go to Tondo with teams, and we would go up to this place called Smoky Mountain. Poor, 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 poor. And the teams would go there and see these little kids in the middle of the dirt playing and nobody else around. They're 6 months old, a year old, 2 years old, all of these kids and no mom. We'd say, "Where's the mom?" The neighbors would say, "Oh, she's with her boyfriend. She'll be back tonight." The kids are malnourished, sores all over them. Teams would say, "We've got to do something." So they would go buy milk at the store for the infant. And they bought like 6 months worth of formula, gave it to the mom, cried, went home. 2 weeks later, we went down with another team. When we brought the other team down, all the milk's gone. This is 2 weeks later. We're like, "Where's all the milk?" The mom says, I never forget this. She said, my other kids needed the milk, so I gave it to them too. And the neighbors come to us and said, no, she sold the milk. She sold the milk. This is the example of when helping hurts. Okay, when sometimes people come in and they keep giving and giving and giving and giving, not realizing that what's actually happening is they're enabling, okay, and they're creating dependency. And she had learned that her kids were a way for her to make money if they were sick. And so at some point, we went there and there were two kids and they were in the hospital, Romeo and Aldrin. And so we ended up convincing the mom for us to take them and bring them to the hospital. We brought them to the hospital. The little one almost died. When we brought him there, his blood oxygen level was 65%. They panicked. They came around. He was in the hospital for about 2 weeks. Ended up being placed into our home. About 2 weeks later, the mom calls us and says, "I have a daughter too. You can have her." We're like, "Okay, where is she? Or how old is she?" "She's 11 years old. "Well, what, does she live with you?" "No, she lives on the streets. She just does whatever she wants to." An 11-year-old girl living on the streets in the poorest area of Manila, we all know what's going to happen. So we went down there. We ended up finding her and somehow convinced her to come to our home and placed in our home. So let me show you a picture of them now. So over on your left is Christine, Romeo, and Aldrin. They're in our home. Everything is not necessarily great. They are all way, 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 way behind in school because when a child is born and they don't get proper nutrition, their brain doesn't develop the way it should. And so we have specialty teachers come in for them. Aldrin was in the hospital for like seizures for a while, things like that. But their life is so much better, so much better. And Christine just turned 18, and she's in 10th grade, I think. And she is so sweet. She went through a hard time, but now she's kind of really kind of recovered a lot. On the right is May. And actually, we found out her name, we named her May because she was found in May. Her name was May Ann. So this is a little party. I had a picture of when we sent May home with her adoptive biological mom, right? True story. God has been doing so many stories at the ministry. And I wish I had time to tell you all of them, but let me take three more, just surface level. Slide. So on the left is Armin and Sophie. Armin lived in the community that we serve. He would be in the feeding programs that we would do. But he was a drug addict. He was on alcohol. He actually sold his body to men for sex so that he could make money to go to school. Rough, rough, rough life. He met some people on a team, was translating for them, found Christ when he was translating for a team that came to Kids International Ministries. One of the girls on that Nate team, her name was Sophie from Australia. And after 2 years, they started developing a relationship a little bit. Sophie came to the Philippines to do an internship in 2020, just before COVID. They got stuck in the Philippines. They ended up getting engaged in the Philippines. They ended up getting married in the Philippines. And then this year, and they became missionaries with us. Armin is phenomenal at preaching. He will literally go to the street and tell about Jesus, okay? And he's a preacher in the church that's kind of connected with us for a while. But Sophie and Armin decided they wanted to start a family, and she wanted to go to home to Australia to start the family with her family in Australia. So they moved back to Australia about 4 months ago, but I know they'll be back. In the middle is Ray. Ray lives in Tondo in the area that that Romeo and Aldrin and all them live. Ray, when he shares his testimony, he used to live on the streets. He said he was in the gutter sleeping. And one of our missionaries down there saw him. Actually, somebody else invited him to come to a Bible study that one of our missionaries was doing. And he's like, I don't like the Bible stuff. That's how he says it. He says, I don't like that Bible, praise stuff. And his friend said, they have food. He's like, okay, I'll go. If you ever don't think food saves, okay? And so he came, and our missionary said, found out he didn't have a place to live, invited him in to live there. He's lived there now for, I think, 8, maybe 10 years, okay? He is now runs the boys' home in Tondo. He is our leader down there. He's a missionary with us at this point as well. On the right-hand side is Cassandra. Cassandra, in 2020, so I haven't told you the story of 2020, but I'll tell you this. 2020 was a transformational time on the ministry. It changed what we did. It expanded the ministry. We literally, kind of the summary of what happened is, in COVID, we had to shut everything down. The government said, no, you can't feed. You can't do any of these things. About 2 weeks later, we had people come to us and say they're hungry. So we ended up cooking food and distributing at our gate, and we just cooked more and more and more food, and then the government came to us and said, can we get some food? And I said, well, can we also give it to pastors? And they said yes, and the race was on. We went from feeding maybe 6,000 meals a week to feeding 250,000 meals a week all of 2020. It was insane. We were cooking food for 18 hours a day, 18 burners going that whole time, invited some youth in, okay, to help us cook. We had 40 youth. I invited a youth pastor. Cassandra was one of them, okay? And Cassandra found Christ, and now she is one of our missionary interns. So she works within Youth Lab and with a lot of our kids inside of our youth ministry, and she is incredible. And she does this thing called YL Juniors. They go into the communities and share in the communities that are around us. Actually, it's the community that she lives in. So she brings kids from our ministry to go into her community to do like a kids program. And they all go there and they come back. And when they came back, I looked at them and I was like, Cassandra, what batch were you? And she was like, what do you guys say, what do you mean? when we did the, when we did camps in the middle of COVID, right? And batches are which group were you in? She says batch 8. That was 2021. I said, how did you get to who invited you? She said, another guy, I can't remember his name, and he was in batch 1. So here you have somebody that was in batch 1 who accepted Christ, invite her in batch 8, she accepted Christ. I looked at all of the ones that were helping her, a lot younger. I said, what batch were you? They said, we don't have a batch. We were YL kids. They were the ones that we were reaching out to in the community. They started becoming part of our youth ministry, and now they are going into the community. I mean, that is discipleship in action. And all of these kids are less than 21 years old, right? There's story after story after story. So who do we serve? We serve the poorest of the poor. In Cuatro, it's not quite as poor. In Tondo, it is very poor. Usually people live on less than $2 a day. And poverty, a lot of people think poverty is about money, right? If you just gave them money, it would solve poverty. Let me tell you this from personal experience. It will not solve the problem of poverty, okay? Because poverty, true poverty in the Philippines, is about identity. It's who does somebody believe they are. If they believe, okay, that they have no potential, that their parents grew up here, their grandparents grew up here, their great-grandparents grew up here, this is who they will be. I got to tell you what, that is who they will be. And so what we do is breaking that cycle of poverty is by taking and doing things to show them what their true identity is. So let me tell you each one of the ministries really quickly. I broke them up into groups so you can grasp them because there's so many. So first of all is care. So this is where we care for kids, okay, that have no other option. So we have a girls' home, a boys' home, and Adonai. We actually have 2 girls' homes and 2 boys' homes because in Tondo, we have 2 very small homes, okay? And those are kids, the ones in our home are actually orphans or abused, have been placed there. The ones in Tondo have no place to live, right? And so we have both of those. And then we have Adonai. So Adonai is a home for crisis pregnancy. It's where Abby is now running that ministry. Education. So education, we have a school, and this year we have a preschool, and this is a picture of one of our missionaries, Ming, with the preschool, and then we also do a college program, so a lot of kids can't go to college, and it is a way for them to get out of where they're at, and so we have a college program where we don't just give them money and send them to college. What we do is we say, we have a job for you, we'll let you work, we will pay you by sending you to college. Right? And so they have to work their way through college. It's an incredible program. We have about 15 kids in that program, okay? Then we have, I'm going to call them outreach ministries, okay? So we have family ministry where, you know what the best way to impact a kid is? Impact the family they live in. And so we have a bunch of people that are part of our family ministry, about, I think, 18 couples that do Bible studies in the communities around us and share with them and disciple them and all of that kind of stuff. And then we have a sports ministry where we now have a basketball court, which was an amazing gift to the ministry, which I don't have time to tell you about. But sports is a great way to share Christ in the Philippines, especially basketball. You will be surprised when you meet kids, you'll find out they know more about the NBA than you know about the NBA. Anybody in the U.S. I mean, they know the stats. They know everything. They love it. I like to say all of these things that we do are tools. Food is a tool to share Christ. Basketball is a tool to share Christ. We'll get to our clinic. Delivering a baby, it's a way to share Christ, okay? They're all tools. Then we have, on the last slide, before that, back up. Okay, sorry, maybe I'm wrong. We have, okay, family ministry, sports ministry, and youth ministry. Youth ministry started in the middle of COVID with inviting those kids in. At the beginning of 2020, we had no youth ministry. At the beginning of 2021, we had 300 high school students in our youth ministry, 200 middle school students, another 200 reaching out to in the kids. God transformed the ministry through difficulty, okay? Next slide, okay? Hope Alive Clinic is, we have a clinic that focuses on pregnancy because a lot of times, like I told you, when a baby is born and they're not cared for, it just perpetuates the cycle. And so we give prenatal vitamins, we feed them, we even deliver their babies. There were 444 babies born at the clinic 2 years ago. Amazing, and we share Christ in the middle of it, right? They come in, they hear a Bible study. We have so many women that come to Christ, and now their husbands are coming, and we have a whole group of Muslims that are coming because they won't go to the hospital, but they trust our midwife, who is a Muslim, came to the ministry, worked at the clinic, became a Christian, and now sharing with them Christ. Amazing transformation. Then we have the food program where we go out and do feedings, and then Tondo Ministry, which I've already talked about. I got to catch up here. Next slide. Then we have what's called our partnership. So we call it Church Connect. In the middle of COVID, we literally got connected with, I'm not exaggerating, 500 plus pastors around Manila. We now do conferences for them. We bring in speakers, about 4 different conferences a year. We provide them food so that they can feed their communities and reach that community for Christ. Amazing ministry. And then every Thursday and Saturday, a bunch of pastors come to our ministry center and just have coffee and talk. And we're like, no theology, because they're all different denominations. We said, just talk and build relationship. And it's a wonderful, wonderful ministry. And then we have a ministry we call Volunteers, which you guys have been part of. And all the pictures here, oh, he hasn't gone there yet, are of everybody that are here, right? Next slide. Yep. So your church was part of our volunteer ministry. And like I've already said, Volunteers is not just about, hey, you coming and helping. I am passionate about it because it changes the people who come in amazing, amazing ways. So how can you help? Well, I'm going to just tell you a couple of things. Number one, pray, 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 pray. I have that number 4, but it's number 1. Come join us. You will not believe it. I cannot describe to you what God is doing in words. You actually have to see it. And then something that we're working on, I don't have it all done yet, but I wanted to make you aware of this. We have a lot of space in our children's home, a lot, but we have no money. Like, we could have twice as many kids. So what I really need for people to do is maybe come together and sponsor a new child. Like, not sponsor a child that is there, but sponsor a child that we don't know yet that we can bring into our home. So if you're interested in that, talk to me. And then we have CCS families. Go to the next slide. So we have the school, and one of the really cool things is we are reaching out to the, remember I told you family ministry. So we're reaching out to the families in the community, and we think a really cool way of doing this would be for people to support a family. It costs $35 a month to send a kid to school, and you have families that have 5 kids, and they can't afford even $35 a month, all right? So we're coming up with like a sponsorship program long-term for that, okay? So second part, I don't like just sharing about the ministry. Because I love telling the stories, I like telling about the ministry, but you know what? God has done so much in my life because I have been at the ministry. He has taught me so many lessons at the ministry. And the first one, everybody on the team's laughing because they've heard this before. But I have been really, really stretched in my faith at the ministry, okay? Where there are some things that I look at and I go, how in the world are we going to do this? The example is we built a high school, okay? So this high school, we bought this land for the high school. Amazing story how we got the money for the land. And then I would walk the land, and I would pray, "What God, what are we doing here? Why are we here? What is our purpose?" I'm thinking we're going to build this school, small little school, you know, have teams come in and build it, and, you know, small classrooms, just it's in a very, very poor community. So I walked the land, and I got to what is our purpose. I kind of heard, love God, love others, right? That's our purpose. And I was like, okay, but the words came to me which were, our purpose here is to show the kids that go to our school and the families in this community God's extravagant love for them. And if God's love for them is extravagant, then why can't you build a school that's extravagant? Why can't you build a school with computers in every classroom, but, you know, science lab, chemistry lab, auditorium, basketball court, all this stuff? When God said that, I thought, that costs a lot of money. And I am not a fundraiser, guys. I don't. And God just stretched it to where now we have 3 stories. We have another 3 to go, okay? And I get overwhelmed because of what God has done to provide, number 1. And number 2 is we have a long ways to go. Just on the high school, we have $1 million left to build the high school. And the phrase that has come to me is, there's a thin line between faith and insanity. Walk the line. Walk the line. Because if we can do it ourselves, it's not faith. If I on my own can go do this thing, it is not faith. Okay? If I'm working at it and doing it, it's when we have to trust Him to do it. And so at the ministry, we talk about that a lot, is let's not get our effort in the way of our faith. Right? So walk the line. Walk the line. Second thing, a very strange blessing for me personally at the ministry. So let me describe what this is. So 2007, I'm going to go all the way back in my life to 2007, was the most difficult year in my life ever. So much so that I remember going down the highway on my way to work, so angry inside, took my fist and hit the dashboard, and I just said, why? Why, God, do you allow this? I have prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed for years and years and years, and why do you keep allowing this to happen? And it really created for me a problem in my life, in my faith, because I have and still do in some ways have a challenge with prayer. Because of that experience that happened for years and years, in 2019, okay, same type of thing. Here I am at the ministry and feeling that same way. God, why? Why are you doing this? Why aren't you answering my prayers? Why don't you just heal? Why don't you bring healing? Okay? And then COVID happened. And I had to make a decision in COVID, okay, which was, do I stay in the Philippines or do I come back home? It was a really hard decision, right? Because I have 3 kids and grandkids and all that kind of stuff. And I booked a flight home. And the night of, I'll never forget it, the night that I was going to go back to the Philippines, I literally woke up in the middle of the night. If I have one time God spoke to me, that was it. Okay? It was, nope, you need to stay. You need to stay. And I'm like, oh. So I canceled the ticket. I called my kids. I said, I don't feel comfortable with coming. And then everything shut down after that. And for the longest time, I felt very uncomfortable. It was like, should have I done that? Should have I not? And then everything started happening with COVID. And everything started happening with the feeding programs. And everything, God just started to do all kinds of stuff. And I remember there was one time I went to the director on our board is a pastor of a church in Australia. And I said, Jeff, I can't explain it, but I feel at peace. And he said these words to me. He said, Norman, that is called a peace that passes understanding. You can't understand it. And it brought me back to the verse I've memorized, right? That says, next slide. Oh, keep going. One more. There you go. Have no anxiety about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, make your request be made known to God, and the peace of God that passes. I'd always read that verse differently. It says, if you pray, God's going to answer it. Have no anxiety about anything. Pray about it. God will. No. God will give you peace. He didn't say He would take care of the problem. He said He would give you peace through the problem. And it transformed my thoughts of prayer. Transformed my thoughts of what I expected as answers to prayer. A lot of times I pray now, give me peace. When I pray for other people, I'll say, give them peace. Peace in the middle of difficulty, okay? I'm confused. So, next slide. Another verse, okay, that God has used during the time. It says, but He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. Then he goes on, he says, that is why for Christ's sake I delight in weaknesses and insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties, for when I am weak, I am strong. You know what I found out about this verse? I looked at it and I'm like, my grace is sufficient for you. What is his grace? Okay, my power is made perfect in weakness. Do you know that weakness, your weakness, is his grace? Because if it's not for your weakness, you would never know his strength. Do I view in my life when hard things happen that that is the grace of God in my life drawing me to him? He's drawing me to him through hard times, through difficulties, through COVID, through everything that happened in the ministry, through everything that happens in family. He's drawing me through to him using his grace. Okay, Corrie Ten Boom said, "You can never learn that Christ is all you need until Christ is all you have. You can't do it. It is impossible." Okay, Amy Carmichael, missionary to India, so many difficulties in her life. She said, "Suffering is not for nothing. It is the very process that God uses to shape us. It is his grace. Because if it wasn't for that, we would not be shaped in our life." Okay? The one I love that makes me feel better, Johnny Erickson at Tata says, "Sometimes God allows what he hates to accomplish what he loves." Does it ever bother anybody that God said, "Hey, look at Job"? God accomplished what he wanted in Job's life because he did that. He wanted Job to learn the lessons that he learned and for Job to say, "My eyes had seen you, but now my ears have heard of you. I mean, my ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you." That's what God wanted in that circumstance, right? Next slide. Another verse. Nope, back up. He goes too fast. You're fired. I'm just kidding. Out of his fullness, we all have received grace in a place of grace that was already given. For the law was given through Moses and grace through... What in the world are you talking about, Norman? What is this? Well, there's another translation that says grace upon grace, which, by the way, I don't think it's a good translation because the word in between grace and grace is anti. And what it really means in that case is it says instead of, in place of, corresponding to, following after, or in exchange for. What God did is he already gave grace. Do you know what his grace was? The law. How is the law grace? What says it? It says, "For the law was given through Moses." What does the law do? What is the purpose of the law in our lives? It's to draw us to him. The law was grace in our lives to draw us to Jesus, the furthering of the grace. The law, hard times, difficulties, persecutions in our lives accomplish his purpose. And in the ministry, it has been so hard. And God has taught me so much. So much. It is actually an incredible time. So, the last one. Be completely humble. Where do I get this from? There's a book called Sit, Walk, and Stand by Watchman Nee. And I love, I read this book in the middle of COVID, and I love the book and the concept. At the very beginning, it's going through Ephesians 1 and 2. You read Ephesians 1 and 2, and it is talking about what God is doing for you. It never talks about what you need to do. It talks about what God has done in the heavenlies and preparing and loved you and high, wide, deep, long, all of this amazing, amazing, amazing stuff, okay? Then he gets to chapters 3, 4, and 5, and it is, this is what it looks like, okay? I want to say this is what it looks like, not what you need to do. When God loves you, it changes you, okay? And those things, what Watchman Nee says is he says, don't walk without sitting at the same time. You sit in what God has done in your life. It isn't about you. It's not about what I have done. It's not about my effort. It's not about all these things that I have plans for. It's about what he has already done. And because of that, it produces something in me. Okay? And that is that walking. But there's one phrase in between that bugged me. It says, be completely humble. Why? Because it wasn't you in the first place. What he's saying is don't get proud about all of this stuff that you're doing because it's not you, it's him. You hear that? It's not you, it's him. It's not me. It's him. Be completely humble. Like, nothing you do matters. Do you really believe, okay, that when Jesus said in John 15, apart from me, what can you do? Nothing. Do we really believe that? Do we believe that if it wasn't for Christ, anything we do meant absolutely nothing? Do I really, really believe that? Because it's true. It says that. I need to rely on Jesus. On Jesus, not my effort. So, I'm going to end with this. I'm going to read this. It's going to take just a little bit. But God did something to me about a year ago. I was on a beach in the Philippines. I always wake up early in the morning. I was probably 4 o'clock in the morning. The sun isn't up. And I went to the beach, and it was dark, and the sun was just starting to rise. And all of a sudden, I see this horse riding on the beach. And I thought, oh, that's cool, in the sunset. And it started doing something inside of me, so I started to write. Recently, the phrase of in Christ, by Christ, through Christ, and Christ in me have fascinated me. Paul uses them over 150 times, more than any other phrase. It is so important to him. Now I have come to believe the Christian life isn't about me trying to become more like Christ, but instead becoming less me and more him. The first phrase, being like Christ, is focused on me. It's like him teaching me to ride a horse. The second phrase, Christ in me, is different. The focus is not me, the focus is Christ. It's more like being on a horse with him and him controlling the reins. At the beginning of my Christian walk, I wanted to be like him and I wanted him to teach me to control the horse. The second phase, but I still wanted to hold the reins. I tried to control the horse, but I would fail and frustration would build. Every once in a while, I would do something right and say to Jesus, who is sitting behind me, look at me. I'm in control of the horse now. Aren't you proud of me? Where do you want me to go now? Jesus would pause and gently say, it's not about the destination. It's about who is directing the horse. Why don't you give me the reins? But I thought, I had this figured out. Jesus, I've got it figured out. Let me do it. He was so patient. He said, okay, let's go watch the sunset. With reins in my hand, I proudly went to the wrong place. Frustrated and angry, I yelled at Jesus, why won't you help me? Why did you let this happen? I try so hard, and you just sit behind me. His response was as gentle as he said, I am trying to help you. Just hand me the reins. I finally gave in. What a ride. I never understood what my horse was capable of. I watched carefully and to see how he controlled the horse, how he used the reins. I noticed him whispering something in the horse's ear and stroking its mane. I watched as he ran the horse through the water at the beach on sunset. We ended up at a calm spot on the beach just to talk, and we enjoyed the breeze. The sun set, and I was overwhelmed by the beauty of it all. I have never witnessed anything like that before. In the morning, he jumped off the horse. He jumped on the horse and grabbed the reins. Come on, Jesus, where do you want to go? Jesus said, give me the reins, and I'll show you. I paused and thought for a moment, and then responded, I watched you yesterday. How you used the reins to control the horse, how you whispered in the horse's ear. I learned a lot yesterday. Let me try. I like holding the reins. Being ever patient with me, Jesus told me again where he wanted to go, and that day ended in frustration. In the following days, I repeated this process. I handed him the reins. I watched carefully, taking the reins from him and trying again and again. Finally, out of frustration, I yelled at Jesus, why can I not control the horse like you? Why doesn't it listen to me? Why does he go left when I say go right? Can you please teach me how to do what you do? In a loving voice, he said something to me that I will never forget. My son, the only thing you need to understand is this. When I created the horse, I created it to listen only to my voice. I can teach you all you want, but it will not help. You will get tired and frustrated if you're holding the reins. When I created you with a purpose to ride with me on the horse as I take the reins. What a good time we'll have. Remember running through the water on the beach, the sunset, and the mountains? Our life as a Christian is not about learning to try to control the horse. We will only fail. Our job as a Christian is to hand the reins to Jesus. He will control the horse. If we spend our lives taking the reins in order to control our own lives, we will fail. We have only one lesson to learn in life, handing our control of our lives to Jesus. Paul said it many times. And that is why he used the term in Christ so many times. When we are in Christ, Christ is in control. The Bible talks about the horse and two riders just with different words. I have been crucified with Christ, It is no longer I who lives, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I have my own translation. It's called the NIV, Norman's International Version. It says, I have fully given up trying to control the horse. It is no longer I who am in control. Instead, I have given the reins to Jesus who rides with me and controls the horse for me. I challenge you guys really to think about that in your life. Where are you depending on yourself instead of depending on him? And you think, I can do this, rather than saying, I can't do this. God, you are going to have to do this for me. It's been a challenge in my life for a long time.